Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is Monday. Oh, no, what is not Monday? It's Thursday.
Get your shit together.
Get it together here. Thursday, April 1st. It is April 1st. 2021, and this is episode 70 of my live chat. Hello, everyone. My name is Luke Thomas. I'm from CBS Sports and Showtime. And today, it is April Fool's Day, BC.
Can you form some words a little bit better, please?
No, not really. They don't pay me to do that very well. But you are here. You are our special guest. This is not a
joke. I'm making history. Has anyone ever guessed it on your live chat before?
Yes. But it was in an iteration that I think five people saw.
Who was the guest?
Jack Encarnasau.
From Boston.
Yes.
He is a very, he's a historian of both mixed martial arts and pro wrestling, and he's very good. He has a podcast that's absolutely incredible for pro wrestling.
The Lapsed Fan.
It's great. So shout out to you, Jack. Well done.
Jack is a great guy. He was working at Sherdog at the time.
Yes.
And then I don't think I had another guest ever except when you came
around. No, true or false, did you read Jack the Riot Act and give him a lecture like you gave me before the start of this where you said, "This isn't like regular morning combat or room service. It says my name on it. You got to kind of—"
That's right.
"You got to be a little bit more serious.
You are a guest here, my friend, not a host."
All right, then I'll let you handle it. I'll be a voyeur. All right. Okay. This will be a lot like your early sexual encounters, right? You know, like, yeah.
Okay, BC. Well, I realize you're gonna do. You have one gear. I explicitly was like, "Hey, don't do that kind of thing." And the first thing you did.
I'm just getting it out of my system. I'm gonna be very serious. People know. Not just in the tweed, but also when the camera turns on and it's time to be serious. I don't know if you watch a little project called Ring City USA, but your boy BC can bring it.
All right. Do you talk about touching yourself at a bus stop on
no,
that show?
No, I've been to Puerto Rico, though. I don't know if you've seen
it. I have heard. Okay, so here's how this goes. Usually it's just me. Today, of course, BC is here. We will go for about an hour and 15 minutes. I post an open thread either the day before or the day of the chat. People fill it up, and then we go to it from there. We can talk about whatever you want. Bellator is tomorrow. We can get to that or not.
Don't UFC try to news. Make us laugh, though, because that's for Room Service Diaries tonight. This is technically
a little bit of levity is okay, but right? Room Service Diaries will be off the rails a little bit later. All right. So, BC, let us open things up. This is you polluting. This is you immediately walking in and just peeing in the pool with your presence. That's what you do. First question, it has the most recommendations. Do you know why? It's actually to me. Do you know why BC was so afraid to say that Johnny Sins was his favorite porn star on yesterday's Morning Combat? A couple things. Usually this is not the first kind of question that
we
get.
Yeah, I'm not into this question, okay?
Also, I don't know the answer because BC's a strange bird. So, BC, why were you so afraid to say Johnny Sins?
I actually have never seen Johnny Sins, as you said.
Sins, like,
I've
you
never
know,
seen his
evil.
Work. I've never seen his work. He sounds pretty evil to me, but, yeah. Am I here to talk adult films, dude? I'm here to talk technical analysis.
Well, is there a thing to this?
No. I have no connection.
Are you doing a bit?
I'm not doing a bit. Bro, I was explicitly told there's no bits at this table, okay?
Okay, but I'm asking you if you're doing a bit.
No.
You're not doing it? Okay, all right. Okay, next. At the very top level of the heavyweight division, does Francis have an inherent advantage over his competitors by virtue of knocking his competitors into the netherworld so quickly that there isn't any meaningful tape for his competitors to study ahead of time? By contrast, guys like Lewis, Stipe, and Jones have hours of tape on them, allowing Francis to game plan for the actual skills of his competitors. BC, there's
a great question. You get this is all you get in your live chat. It's
no,
really a good question.
But these are predominantly what they're like. But the answer to this one's pretty easy to say, I would argue, BC, because one thing we always talk about when we have Patricio, for example, Pitbull fighting tomorrow, we bring up the fact that, dude, look, he as good as he is, and he is formidable. There's a lot of tape to study on him, not merely what he has become, but what were the pieces at what times that he added over time to do it. And I think if there's less tape on you, that's obviously going to be a benefit. So yes, is he? Does that advantage Francis substantially? I would say that it does. A couple caveats, I would argue. One big caveat, the way I would put it. Here's the caveat to that. You saw in this fight with Stipe, he exercised patience. And with that patience came an additional part of a second round. Not much of one, but it did extend that far. To the extent that he's exercising meaningful game plans, they're almost generally going to be very, not slow, but moderate, patient, not rushing. That's going to make his fights, as he fights the very best guys as champion, that's going to extend the amount of tape that's on him. I think, in other words, more tape is coming, and a lot of it.
Good point on that, but certainly it's an inherent advantage because, how much are you going to learn from 40 seconds here, 20 seconds there? Obviously, that speaks for itself. But one thing you and I, last night as we were hanging out offline, no cameras, Luke, just you and I.
I did record our interactions.
Oh, God.
I'm teasing. No, I didn't.
Oh, boy. One thing, we talked about of serious note is that even though Francis just, I don't want to say shocked the world because we knew it was in him, but to come out with that thorough of a performance, it was jarring, it was shocking. When someone typically does that, they don't have a great resume up to that point. Yet part of the fuel of me being willing to put Francis so high in my updated CBS Sports Pound for Pound rankings, which would make a lot of people go, God, Francis at 5? Like, what are you doing? Is his resume already pretty fucking good? Like, it's really damn good.
Yeah.
You and I went fight by fight UFC debut.
We did do this, yes.
And it was literally like, oh, he's got wins over all these guys, and all of them, for the most part, are first-round knockouts, and he's the champion not in, like, his third or second step-up fight. He's the UFC champion with 2 wins over Curtis Blaydes, knocking out Cain Velasquez in the first round, knocking out Junior Dos Santos in the first round, finishing Stipe Miocic dominantly in their title rematch.
Honestly, his 2 best wins might be the fact that he beat Curtis Blaydes by stoppage twice.
You know, just destroying everyone mixed with, and then you brought up a good point, even the loss to Stipe, he showed a lot of sort of things that spoke a lot of the promise that he could do what he's doing today. He never buckled under. He never stopped coming forward. He, despite how exhausted or hurt he was, he kept coming back. I mean, really, for a guy who seems like he's come out of nowhere into this, his resume is pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, it's excellent at this point. But I do think...
Oh, Overeem. I mean,
The
first
Overeem
round knockout of Overeem,
yep.
And let's not forget the Arlovski one. Arlovski was the number 2 ranked heavyweight at the time. So
that's right.
That win mattered, that first round knockout.
Right, and then the knockout of Overeem is maybe the most spectacular you'll see in heavyweight MMA. Okay, so sometimes we get into stuff that's not necessarily MMA related. Here's a great example of this. This is what I was debating Snyder with earlier. As a DC resident, were you surprised at the mayor's response in relation to the Uber driver that died? It seemed that she was deflecting from the problem.
You got passionate as shit about this to where I had to say, guys, could you take Meet the Press down the hall here? I'm trying to do mixed martial arts.
Do you know this story?
I don't.
I'll make it very quick about it. There was this Uber driver. He was near Nationals Park, which is in D.C., which is typically it's something of a changing area, but there is a lot of very expensive real estate on there. I would actually call it right around Nats Park quite nice. I have not exactly reviewed where he was.
Subject of gentrification?
A pretty big one, actually. Yeah, that's right. A lot of it was unoccupied space, too. Because Audi Field is right next to Nats Park. It's just kind of open space. But the point is this. He was carjacked by 2 teenage girls, I think 1-13, 1-15, both of them African-American. And they showed the most insane, evil, callous recklessness. He was attached to the car as it was moving, and they walked over his body looking for a cell phone. I mean, absolute hideousness in every capacity you could possibly imagine. And it tore the community apart. It was terrible. So she gets out there and on Twitter didn't mention that incident.
Who is she?
The Mayor Bowser.
Oh, Mayor Bowser, all right.
But then she put out a tweet being like, hey, we have some guidelines around how to protect, because the carjackings are up. Crime is up in all major cities through the pandemic, D.C. being one of them.
Even in my quiet Connecticut suburbs, crime is up.
Crime is up nationally.
Everywhere, yeah.
It's one thing that no one's talking about. Crime is up. Like that 30, 40-year decline in crime, that shit is over. In any event, so she was trying to do some mayorly guidance around it, and the tweet was basically being like, hey, here's how to protect yourself from car theft and, carjackings. You know, lock your stuff. Don't make yourself available. And it was in these guidelines. She even had a hashtag for it. And people lost their fucking mind on her because they're like, yo, so the driver's it was the driver's fault that he got murdered viciously by two teenage girls. The fuck is wrong with you? This person was asking, basically, how do you think the mayor handled it? What is your assessment based on what I've told you? Which I realize you're getting everything
I'm
about
getting,
this secondhand.
I'm getting through your funnel there. I mean, it seems, you know, insensitive. I wouldn't you know, rake her over the coals and kill her over there. But it seems like it was the wrong message at the wrong time.
That's right.
I did want to focus, though, on the increase of crime. I'm just noticing even in my local communities, like, break-ins to cars and houses are just at levels
wildly
we haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
Is it due to the desperation caused by the pandemic or more toward the fact that it's not as easy to get caught in some of this stuff with less people out?
I'm gonna table that question because I think it's a really good one. That would be my hunch. It's hard to divorce extreme economic calamity from a rise in crime, but I bet criminologists would say it's more complicated than that, and so it probably is more complicated.
So you're gonna put it on a table and let it
I think we need to figure out what the fuck is happening, but crime is quite obvious. Crime is incontestably up. That part we know for sure. How long it will stay this way and why, it's a little bit less clear, although economic anxiety, I think, is a big one. My issue with the mayor is, and this is what I agreed with the guy we were debating, was that was not the tweet to send out at that time, right? That was really bad. It was a terrible look. It was extraordinarily insensitive. I mean, this is a horrible murder about, you know, a guy who had done nothing wrong in his life.
But does D.C. have a good history of mayors behaving well? No.
Mayor Bowser, to this point, has been largely fine. I think.
I don't know if I could take her seriously calling her Mayor Bowser.
I know. Yeah. Everyone does the whole thing with the Mario Brothers. But yes, this is a city that elected Marion Barry. But since then, there have been significantly more competent municipal managers. She has largely proven herself to be that through difficult circumstances. But here's my point about the guidelines she had released. If it was a different situation where this was a year ago, pre-pandemic, let's even say, and she had put out those guidelines, yes, with crime being down, I don't think that the documents and the guidelines she was releasing are bad. Whenever I've had my shit stolen in my car, it's because I left a phone in there. I left a wallet in there. Like, there is obviously something to be said for probably going to have crime in a situation where most car doors are locked and people are extending vigilance. The problem is when you connect basic advice for general purposes to this extreme incident, which is as horrible as you can imagine. The blowback was significant to it.
It gets pretty heavy in the live chat. I mean, you know,
yeah,
this is,
yeah, sometimes.
Wow.
Sometimes we ask about, you know, dildos and shit. I don't know. Not really that. All right, BC.
I'll make it look easy.
Okay, so they're asking about more stories about hanging out with the Diaz brothers. I've only hung out with them really, really once, more times than that in extended conversations. But have you ever hung out with a famous fighter?
I've gone to dinner with Rashad Evans and had a bunch of wine and said a lot of inappropriate things
okay.
and laughed a lot with
okay.
him. So that's an event I've definitely enjoyed in my life.
Okay.
Outside of that, I've hung out with some boxers during fight weekends where they come out to dinner. I'll tell you what, I always say this, you know, Sergio Mora, the former junior middleweight world champion who's now the color commentator on
DAZN. From the first season of The Contender.
One of the better people on this planet. It was before one of the big fights at the end of his career, I think his first fight with Danny Jacobs, where we walked into a restaurant, Todd Grisham and I, and we had a couple other people with us, and he goes, oh, over here. He sees us from a distance. Now, he's having the night before dinner, before a big fight in the second half of his career. He's got his trainer, his whole entourage, his whatever, and he's taking them out to dinner. And you think about, like, you know, these guys aren't always making a ton of money, and they've got to pay for the camp, and they've got to pay for everybody. And he was like, no, you guys are sitting with me. And we barely knew the guy. And he's like, whatever you want, it's on me. And we're like, no, but he's like, no. You're going to insult me if you don't. And just, you know, took us out, included him and his family. There's been some great moments from that where you really see what people are made of. You get to hear their struggle and their story that I've really enjoyed. I would trade those for a chance to roll some tight ones with the Diazes,
yeah,
believe me, and live that lifestyle. But the few times I've been blessed to have some of these interactions, it's great. I've run into, like, Zab Judah at a bar and heard hilarious drunken boxing stories, that kind of stuff.
That's cool. But, I saw Zab. What was the last time I saw Zab? I saw him. I want to say Mayweather-McGregor. Did you see Zab there? I thought I did.
Yeah.
And he had ridiculous gold chains with the glove and everything. He's a nice guy to talk to. It was funny. You mentioned that. I remember when we went out with the Diazes. I guess I didn't think of it until just now, but they never reached for their wallets all night. But you know what? I was thinking about it. It's like if I was out here because a television show flew me out here to talk to me and my brother and then want to hang out afterwards, you're going to foot the bill for that too. That's a smart move, those Diaz. They're very, very clever.
Very smart. Rashad, by the way, he hasn't told it on air yet, and I keep pressuring him, and hopefully he will on Storytime with Rashad, but he has a really hilarious way of breaking down how he lost to Lyoto Machida and kicked off the one night Welcome to the Machida era.
Where he made the face and everything?
Yeah, where he made the famous face and got folded up, basically, of just sort of like, he says Machida really lulled him into a setting of complacency and sort of, you know, safety, because he was just sort of tapping him with a jab, and he said he was thinking in his mind, man, Machida hits like a bitch. Man, Machida hits like a... Man, Machida hit... Knockout punch. And he just got sent to... He said he was... As he got knocked out, he was saying to himself how much this guy hits like a bitch.
So that's incredible.
The
crazy
timing on that is just... And the humility to share that story.
Yeah, of course. Can't be easy. That's a good one. Do you know who The Weasel is? You may not. It's a little bit inside baseball. There's a guy on YouTube who does... It's a YouTube channel, The Weasel. He's on other social media as well, but like his work is predominantly featured on YouTube. And he does previews and breakdowns are all quite good. He has his own style. It's certainly quite distinct from anyone, including me. And so this person says, The Weasel has stated that Woodley isn't past his prime. He's just been figured out and is fighting better fighters, stating that if you look at the stats, his output has been similar in his three-fight skid compared to earlier fights. Well,
tell your stats to shut the fuck up.
I wouldn't say that so much. I would say the stats may... Listen, I've not seen the video that The Weasel has made, so without seeing that, I don't know what to say. But my thought is that that is sort of true, but maybe beside the point, BC, which is, and again, I would need to see the video. Yeah, there was a time when his athleticism and his skill set was sufficient enough to be the dominant figure in that division. But I do think age is a factor. I do think that the stats won't necessarily reflect that. And I also believe that, yes, he's now facing another wave of contenders that have modern best practices. Yes, the fighters are better. The game this is what it means to say that the game has caught up to you. The game has passed you by.
Stats don't always tell I think the key part, when you lose your mojo, and it can happen overnight.
Hold on. Just for the purposes of the exercise, more clearly define what that means to lose your mojo. What are you really saying?
So look, I think that you can get old overnight in combat sports without question, right? You know, one day you were whatever, and then the next day you just can't take a punch, or you're just not as sharp.
Ton of evidence for that.
Whatever. Yes. I think he lost his mojo. His level of confidence and mental focus and discipline that he had all the way through the Till fight. We talked about this with the resume review, and we even talked about this after he lost his most recent fight. From the man we saw at the Till fight to the man we saw against Kamaru Usman, I don't think it was because of Usman's strategy or because he was that good. I think it was a different man. You know what I mean? You can say, was it too much focus on the rap career and the TMZ and all that? Yeah, maybe some of that. But something happened internally, I think, where we can look at stats. We can look at what I always like to say is he's sort of a front runner where he likes to control the terms of the fight. And if he does have that control, he's so efficient. What happens if he doesn't? Can he rally? I'm not really sure if he's that type of fighter anymore. But I think more than that, he lost that mojo, that inner strength, confidence, and focus that allowed him to feel superior to others, to game plan at such a high level, and to be able to pick out somebody's weakness and do it. Now, is it harder to keep that up when you're physically getting slower? Yes, but the sharpness of that decline between the Till fight and the Usman fight leads me to believe that it wasn't so much physical, and it was a lot more mental and internal. And I don't think the stats can say that. And I think if you're trying to say, well, look at the stats of those three losses compared to whatever, those three losses, those aren't proper stats. He was backpedaling the whole time and on his back and just like barely surviving. You know what I mean? I don't even think those stats count in the discussion.
I would say that, again, I would need to see the argument and see what the stats say to have a better understanding of what's being claimed. But just for my purposes, you know, look at the punch that floored Darren Till and then look at the punches he landed. Let's say even the hard one that he landed on Vicente Luque that had Luque on skates for just a moment. They're nice punches, both of them in their own way, but the one was, and they're different strategies for different opponents.
One was precise and one was desperate.
But one was the pull counter, and then you go right behind it, the pull two, which shows good reflexes, good timing, great decision making, you know, good reading of evidence. That's really strong stuff. The other right hand that landed, it was powerful because obviously Tyron is still a phenomenal athlete.
But it was desperate and just sort of throw it at the
target. Correct. The whole strategy behind it. He was just, go back and watch. It's a lot of just one-twos because he's just trying. That's what I said on Monday's Morning Combat. Yes, he had more activity and there was certainly a lot of verve behind what he was doing, but he was sacrificing his own smarts to get there. I know how smart a fighter Tyron is. Let me finish real quick. I know how smart a fighter Tyron is. So to me, it's like whatever volume there may have been between the Till and, say, Luque fight, I don't know to what extent they're equivalent or not, but let's say that they were. Yeah, but they're not the same punches, and it's not the same context.
So I get that your analysis is typically more leaned into things like technique and stats, and mine can be sometimes more emotional. And
I think that's real.
But that's what separates us. So if you can get in within the emotional side, do you agree that there is something, you know, I always talk about the aura of the Conor mystique of Mystic Mac, and when he was riding such a wave of confidence that we couldn't put limitations on what he was able to achieve because he was just operating so high. I felt that Woodley had his own version of that to a degree as champion, and it left him before the Usman fight. Do you actually agree with that? There's no stats that can prove that, but do you agree that emotionally, confidence, preparation-wise, he just was not the same guy anymore after the Till fight?
I mean, I think he said it. I mean, even he has, we don't know what those are, and obviously he appears to have, and I'm glad to see, I don't think it involves any confrontation with the law or anything like that, but he said, you know, he enjoyed life at the top. He enjoyed being champion. He enjoyed the spoils that came with the position. And part of this last camp, and then I think the camp before it to an extent, was trying to get back to maybe some of those better practices. I had spoken to Dean Thomas, and he was pretty, what's the word I'm trying to describe? He was pretty generic about his descriptions, but even he was like, it's getting back to those things. So there's clearly, even they are telling you, at some point there began the path that he was on that was great, and it detoured a little bit. And I think that gap contributed to some of his difficulties.
I wonder if it contributed to his singing. Remember that song he recorded, that gif that always lingers of falling
in and out of love with you?
It's very similar to your boy David from New Orleans, right?
Ski da boo ee da boo da.
What was the real world
come
song?
Come on, be my baby tonight.
Yeah. Be my baby tonight. Falling in and out of love with you. Yeah.
You're off note for all of it. All right. What makes either of you most nostalgic about the old days of UFC/MMA?
Great question.
What makes...
I will say the specialization of skills, the fact that two people with distinctly different skill sets and they're like... Tell me... I'm not wrong here. They are incompetent at the other skill sets, right?
Yeah.
So it's like wrestler against puncher, and they can't even remotely do it. If the one guy goes down that's not a wrestler, he's just like stuck there. And if the other guy, you know, can't take him down, then he's going to get lit up. I love that. That's such a sharp contrast on the screen, right? I do miss some of that raw basicness of remember people were trying to create their own bullshit disciplines. You know how they'd hold up those cards and it would say like boxing, kung fu.
Yeah.
It would be like Sun Jitsu.
Yeah, Sun Jitsu. Yeah. It'd just be like, you know, just made up words.
Yeah.
Like Pootie Tang talking or something. I would say, yeah. I mean, I think what people just take for granted now, not even take for granted exactly. They just don't, there's no way to internalize it unless you saw it. But in real time, when this was happening, don't get me wrong, there was still fiery debate and denial. But there was also there was a moment in happening across martial arts generally where you were like, oh, we're beginning to figure out that some of this stuff, like there actually is, at the time they were thinking, one way to do this. Like there was a real auditing moment internally about what worked and what didn't and in what situations and in what value. And of course, everyone knows the story over time and what it all became. But I mean, you could feel the ripple effect of fear being like, these dudes from Brazil they're ruining everything for us. They're ruining everything because they are auditing these guys in a way that they had never been audited.
Is that why? Because we look at which discipline dominated throughout UFC history. In the beginning, it was jiu-jitsu, but then it became American wrestling for a long time.
Let's back up before that. What year were you born? 78?
Yeah, you're damn right.
Okay, so I'm 79. We grew up as kids. This should be noted. When we grew up as children, the dominant martial art that everyone kind of knew by name was karate.
Yeah.
Okay? In the 80s, the thing to train was 1,000% karate. Yeah,
because of Miyagi.
And you knew a couple kids that trained taekwondo, and you knew maybe some weirdo.
I mean, there were kickboxing movies which had karate kickboxing.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, karate. Kids now, karate is not the dominant strain. There used to be strip malls all across America with, you know, so-and-so's karate's dojo, da-da-da-da-da. All that shit is gone. All of it is gone. It's a complete switchover, which then led to the big...
But in terms of what we know as organized mixed martial arts on major television, which of course started with the UFC for most of us or all of us, it was jiu-jitsu right away where everyone's sort of like, oh crap, the Gracies really do have the way to figure this out. There is one dominant. But you have to agree, it became, whether you think that changeover began in the late 90s or happened after the turn of the century, it became where wrestling was the dominant base, right?
Yes.
It was like, you know, Randy Couture and Dan Henderson through the Matt Hughes run. Like, so was that the American response to the effectiveness of the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu in the early UFC?
I mean, you saw that in early UFCs with Dan Severn. It predates that. Mark Coleman really being the most formative figure, I think, in UFC.
Well, that's the best way to
counter it? Mark Kerr would be, I think, the first really dominant heavyweight wrestling figure.
Well, and steroids, too. That was a great way to you want to counteract BJJ?
You think he was fucking fighting a bunch of clean fighters? I mean, what are you talking about here? He was fighting other roid monsters, too. So it really began there. But it's just hard to understand for if you're a kid when you grow up, like that the world is simply not arranged this way anymore. So that moment where everything switched, and it wasn't just one moment, it was a series of moments, but living through everything switching over, and then again when you realized, actually, it's not one style, it's a little bit of everything with specializations and blah, blah, blah.
Don't forget, to the spirit of this question, don't forget the romanticized nostalgia of how much early UFC felt illegal, raw, and as I like to mention a lot, like real faces of death. It was sort of like, oh my God, like somebody could lose an eyeball. Like, you really felt that.
Even if you understood nothing else, the consequences of the combat, it was
like no teacher is going to break up this fight. We didn't have a reference point unless you grew up in a really aggressive area to where like a fight could just go until one guy finishes the other. It was like sort of like, you know, well, there's time limits in boxing and, you know, fights around school or even at your workplace get broken up quick because, you know, whatever. And granted, at that point, our culture was a lot more okay with the idea of just fist fights breaking out to settle things. But yet that was sort of like, they're not going to stop this until one person can't continue. Like, this is wild, you know, this is fucking raw. By the way, when you go and rewatch the early ones, sometimes you find a fighter you forgot about or you want it, whatever. What a badass Marco Huas was. Mm. What a freaking badass.
Great tan, too.
He didn't win a UFC title, but he was, like, absolutely
legit. Do you know which fight I watched the other day on Fight Pass out of nowhere? Like, for no good reason. I watched Bob Cook versus Tiki Gosen. So why is that relevant? Because Bob Cook trained with Frank Shamrock.
Yep.
And Tiki Gosen trained with Tito. And so that was a big rivalry, and these were their understudies battling each other. Now, it's interesting because Crazy Bob Cook, that's who he is the guy behind every fighter you can imagine that's done anything.
DC,
all the AKA guys, both generations of them, the Fitch and Koscheck era, as well as the Kane and then DC era, all that, Luke Rockhold, all of them. And Tiki Gosen is now a manager of fighters, including Rampage, TJ Dillashaw, I mean, you name it. I mean, there's dozens more. So I went back and Frank Shamrock, or sorry, Crazy Bob Cook won.
All right.
Okay.
Let's get back to this serious chat, Luke. Hey, the camera's on you, bro.
Yeah, I know. What are your thoughts with Gordon Ryan potentially transitioning to MMA? I can't imagine you've seen a lot of his competitive work. I would say I'm interested to see what happens. I mean, look, they're going to match him up correctly. Gordon's very bright. The people around him are bright. Gary Tonin, who you know, obviously you've seen Gary fight. Gary has already laid a path for, you know, transition and what it all can look like. And so, in general, I would expect success. I would expect success for a dominant period. But I think it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I didn't see his match against Wagner Hocha or some of the other more recent ones. The last grand exposure I got to his game was either some instructional or the last ADCC. And some of that, I mean, what do you say about Gordon? Gordon likes to find a way to get on top or work from the back and to find the back, and he is just excellent at it. A lot of that stuff, though, from ADCC was sitting guard, which is just not really relevant in MMA. And so I have seen Gordon do a little bit of wrestling. It's pretty good. But he also will tell you that even through that ADCC camp, they worked on a style of wrestling that is specific to submission wrestling. It's not specific to MMA, or certainly not even wrestling. So he's got work to do.
He's going to always have work to do coming from a specialized sport to try to round out his game. And when there's a curve with that, but guys sometimes don't get there if they don't have the intangibles, right? The ability to take a punch and come back with one, that kind of stuff. What do you know about his, I know he's a public troll and he's very confident and all that, but what do you know about his intangibles up to this point that would lead you to believe that when he gets into striking wars, when things aren't going his way, that he can survive and swim.
One of the first times I ever, Gordon has made a lot of people, even supporters, eat their own words, because he's been doing this. There was a time when he was a brown belt and Gary Tonin was taking him around and being like, this brown belt will submit any black belt. Come on down and come have a shot at it. And he would just keep submitting all these black belts, and it was pretty interesting. But the one time he really made me eat my words, when I was like, oh, he's EBI good. What you have to understand about EBI, for what it once was, they did have A-class competitors in EBI, but EBI relative, it's a great competition with very interesting rules.
What the hell is EBI?
Eddie Bravo Invitational. Okay. Relative to ADCC, relative to ADCC or Nogi Worlds, it's not the premier tournament or win. Those are all A-class competitors, every one of them. So it's a little bit different. So I thought he was EBI good. He had a match, to answer your question. Gordon had a no-time-limit, sub-only match with Keenan Cornelius. Okay, and at the time, Keenan was the big American hero.
Yeah.
And I thought Keenan was going to give him that work. It went over an hour. I think an hour and like 15. It went like an hour and 15, or maybe even longer than that.
They do that shit?
Dude, no time limit. The only way to win is to submit the other guy.
There's some early UFC feels with that, right?
Yeah, they still do it. U.S. Grappling. Dude, U.S. Grappling, that's the only thing. No time limit, sub only. You'll see black belts go for 2, sometimes 3 hours. Gordon won. Gordon showed resilience there and beat him in that kind of format, and I was extremely impressed by his grit there.
So I'm intrigued by the idea that there's no time limit, but you mentioned there was that league where they get high beforehand?
Rollers.
Do they have time limits in high rollers?
I do not know. I think they use the EBI rule set, if memory serves. Okay. And then they just smoke a shitload of marijuana.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know? Imagine if we did a high roller morning combat edition.
We should do that. Wild. Speaking of which, how funny that someone goes, could we ever see Stoner Luke make an appearance on B-Real's Smoke Box? Have you seen this show?
I know of it. I haven't watched an episode.
Yeah, so B-Real, the former, well, I guess still, the head guy over or whatever at Cypress Hill.
The lead singer, if you will.
Is he a singer, though?
The lead rapper? The lead artist?
He has a show where everyone sits in a car, not really a car, but it kind of looks like a car, and then they just hotbox it. You ever hotboxed a car?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, I've hotboxed a couple.
To the level where you cannot see the person that you're passing to.
I never hotboxed a car until, I'll say this is true, I never hotboxed a car until maybe 27 or 28 years old, because remember, I was in the Marine Corps until 25. So I didn't really touch marijuana at all until, you know, years later. And so they were like, hey, let's go hotbox this car. And we hotboxed the shit of it. It was the first time ever. I'll never forget. Do you remember what song was playing in the car when you did it? Because I can do that with this one.
Damn.
It was 8-Ball MJG to the White Meat. Have you ever heard that song?
I don't know it offhand.
8-Ball and MJG have a song. And I can't say it because there's some inappropriate language in there.
Some racist undertones?
Well, if I said it, it would be.
Some misogynistic overtones?
No, it's called White Meat because the chorus is, beat this dude's head to the white meat.
Wow.
And it's a great song. It's a great song. I remember that was my first time
Luke,
ever doing
it. I didn't, I'm from a factory town, right?
Who doesn't at
I
this
didn't
point?
Realize I grew up white trash until I start to realize that, you know, we'd go over the Herd Brothers' house and they had one of those cars in their yard that didn't work.
It just stayed there.
So it just stayed there. It just became part of the yard, right? I think there were tires on it, but it didn't work. That became the hot box, right? And so they'd be like broad daylight, you know, in the afternoon, and this thing you couldn't see through the windows because we're in the middle of it. I mean, you know, that's where I come from, Luke.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, smoking out.
I either owe a lot of who I am to that, or I lost a lot of who I could have been. Like, you really have to ask yourself that question, okay?
A little column A, column B.
Yeah.
Let's see, Luke and BC, do you think Dana and the UFC are missing out on traction towards their organization by not allowing MMA media to do their jobs properly? No, I don't. I don't think they look at it that way.
Why do they not let media do their jobs properly?
Hold on, let me finish the question and we'll circle back. All right, so do you think Dana and the UFC are missing out on the traction towards their organization by not allowing MMA media to do their jobs properly? After all, bad publicity is still publicity. And do you think we will ever see the day where MMA media stop sucking up to the UFC? I need my fucking glasses. And help make a change for the better, like in the case of fighter pay. No. Well, I mean, listen. Let's go with the first one first. Do you think Dana and UFC are missing out, BC, by being angry at MMA media for asking questions about their business.
No, I don't think they're missing out. They put a certain level of intimidation out there that show that snuffs out, Luke, some of the people who may be who may be pre-inclined to be very journalistic-centered to try to expose things, and also who will be barkers who will stand on the mountaintop and be like, some of this shit is wrong. They kind of, they don't silence, do they silence those people? They get them out of their close sphere.
I don't think, yeah. Here's what they don't do, to my knowledge. They don't call up people and like, don't publish that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's how it works.
But would you agree there is a threat? Now, the threat doesn't stop us, for example, on this show for saying what we feel. I mean, we regularly call out, you know, that wasn't, you know, that was not say. I mean, we call out Dana to the point that he puts at least one of us in a 4-minute video trashing us publicly, right?
Yeah, that was you. That wasn't
so,
me.
So, but you get my point.
Dana loves me.
Like, we're not afraid of the realities out there, but we do understand the threat of the realities, meaning that you don't go to a ton of fights, but you have. I love going to fights and covering them. I mean, that is the one, you know, the major hook that gives me the passion to do this job. But I know that could be taken away because of one out of context comment. They've put that threat out there. It hasn't stopped me from doing my job. But do you believe, Luke, it has stopped many others?
Sure. I think a lot of people, you know, even before all this, like I lived in an era before Loretta Hunt was banned. I know what that's like.
Yeah.
I knew what it like when she was like the premier reporter in MMA. And Dana White put out this video after one of her reports.
God, that was a rough video.
And he was like, why are managers backstage? And, you know, anyone who leaks stuff anonymously is a 6-letter F word. And he, you know, he's going back. We don't have to relitigate it. And I'm not here to say that, like, oh, he should forever pay for that. He apologized for all that stuff. It's fine. Whatever. I'm just saying, in terms of, like how do you live through that and not go, oh, right, there's a limit they'll tolerate. And I don't know what exactly that is, but you can guess where it starts. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Oh, Luke, did you want to tease to the audience, especially the ones that are thinking of leaving right now and shutting the stream off, that we're going to open up some gifts we got from our viewers?
Later? Yeah, we are. So after we're done, we got a bunch of stuff that y'all have sent.
Hopefully it's not an anthrax sandwich.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that it's not rice.
I did pre-open them just in case anything popped out, Luke. I didn't want that to happen on you know.
Okay, let me pull this up if I can on this because I can read better. Because I stupidly did not pull up my glasses. Here we go. What was the second part of his question? I already have this up, BC.
So yes, does it? No, they're not missing out on anything. They are getting a better.
Here's the other one.
You know what they've created with that, Luke? Yeah. Before you do that, with the threat that's out there, they have created a subculture of new wave MMA journalists who are about on-camera performance and putting over the brand. I don't want to say in exchange for access, because I don't think it's that. Are you hearing me? Are you with me? I don't think it's in exchange for access. I just think people have realized, if I take this tone and I go this way, I'm going to still be able to get traffic and pay my bills and do what I want and get to go to these fights. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think they realize that, like, you can create difficulty for yourself, or you can just make this easy on everyone. And let's just make it easy on everyone. And I don't begrudge them that, because that's the only way to have longevity. That won't keep you safe either, by the way. If they decide one day that they don't want you, they will find a reason.
And I'm not here to high horse them. I mean, a lot of what we do is entertainment, right?
Sure. I just mean to say that, you know, I don't begrudge those people because they're just trying to look out for their future. So the question is, if you need some players in the industry who are willing to ask, like, listen, it's not popular to ask questions about, like, hey, are there practices in this industry that are fucked up? It seems like you would want to ask those. Trust me, the powers all, and it's not just UFC. It's like all the very anybody who's got power in this industry doesn't want you asking questions about the way in which they've got stability and they make money.
Poor Mark Raimondi got booed out that time. It was a legitimate question
about the Rona.
About COVID.
Turns out it's like with like the most important question.
Yeah.
And I think Aaron Bronsetter asked him as well, and you know he got a very glib response.
AB's got a Canadian backbone. That guy, right? That Toronto fella. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, he's Canadian, so he still has to be nice.
That's true. That's
you know?
It's very polite.
Let's see. What's the most realistic path to unionization amongst fighters? Someone gifting it to them? I don't want to say they're not going to do it, but yeah, let's list them. You've got Ollie Act, you've got unionization, you've got trade association, you've got some kind of lawsuit breaking up the powers, blah, blah, blah. If you had to do a power ranking about what thing is most likely among those things to disrupt the industry, I'm going to put the fighters getting together and unionizing somewhere near the bottom. Ali Act, well, to me, seems significantly more likely.
You would need an incredible commitment from an upper-tier amount of fighters with something to lose, and you would need them to be willing to sit down and say, go ahead, bring in scab fighters, you know, or go ahead, do what you want. We are not bending. And then you would need to hope, Luke, that the line and the circle they create around them is so strong that people wouldn't be picket jumpers and, you know, the UFC call up and go, hey, I know you're part of that union thing, but we'll pay you four times more than you've ever made to come main event this card. People are going to be jumping off ship left and right. So you would have to have such a strong core of fighters who are like, we are not fighting again until this gets changed, no matter what you do.
Yeah,
you don't have
that. Had Derek Lewis yesterday being like, I'd fight for $8 million. I'm like, oh my God, you guys, this is why.
Well, you can't be mad at anybody, Luke, when there are fighters who have had, you know, even 6, 7, 8, 9 year careers and maybe haven't really made a ton of money and have taken on a ton of damage and they may have some name notoriety.
Okay, but dude, Derek Lewis tweeting, I want to make $8 million is not going to get him $8 million. And you know it's not. It doesn't actually work.
But would you be mad at him for...
For wanting $8 million? Everybody wants
$8
million.
Basically the spirit of saying, okay, John, I know you're trying to take a stand, but God, I'd take a lot less than that to take this fight tomorrow.
Dude, I don't mind people thinking about their own finances first, but there are multiple ways in which you can do that. And one of them is if you just quietly want to say, you know, yeah, I'd fight for that much, but recognizing if you let the situation play out, these are the kinds of strategic long-term thinking to act as, here's what you can't get the fighters to do. To just cut this off. You can't get them to view themselves as having a shared destiny. They don't want to act as if they have a shared good and a shared destiny. They want to act like we can't do that. But the truth is, they of course could.
This is crazy, Luke. Here's what's crazy. The same thing that you just said about MMA fighters and what is preventing the idea of full unionization is the same thing I say when you say, BC, what's a fucking problem with your fucked up boxing. Like, your boxing, I know you love it, BC, but this sport's effed up. They can't make the fights. I can almost give you the same speech that you give about the MMA fighters, but about the boxing promoters. Everyone is so freaking focused on short term rather than long term and the long term health of things that they constantly make short term decisions with long term realities associated with them. And it just keeps delaying the idea of coming together.
Thoughts on you and BC doing a fight companion style show for the Paul Askren fight? Luke, you don't care enough to watch it properly, so you and BC watching it together, having a few drinks, could be great for us to watch. I'd do that.
Yeah, so there's certainly, we've mentioned before that there's been sort of ideas thrown on in talks. Can we create our own version of some kind of fight companion for big fights? There's some hurdles, Luke, one of them being that, you know, I write for CBS Sports and I do a lot of deadline work, but it's not an obstacle we couldn't overcome for the right fight. And we almost came close to kind of launching something like this.
We did. I would say there's a lot of things BC and I are interested in doing. It's just a little bit harder in certain cases to make all of them work. But in due time, I think we will. I think that's probably fair to say, in due time.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere, Luke. I just re-signed. You and I,
I know.
We're either going to make this work or we're going to divorce very... Very, you know,
when Harry
disastrous.
No,
yeah.
Not the other way. No, Kramer
no,
versus Kramer.
Harry Metzeler, they just kept reuniting and
banging. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, maybe like Greg Hardy inviting Tai Tuivasa to fight.
Yeah, I mean, hey, bro, let's bang, right?
Favorite 80s non-action movie?
Great question.
A little tougher than it sounds.
That's a great question because you're right. All my favorite 80s movies would be like Rocky III.
Yeah, all the ones we were
Schwarzenegger.
Kids, like blow them up shit. Yeah.
Let me look if this one is 80s or not because it's right on the border. And I'll tell you what the best 80s movie
is. Did you watch that Woody Allen documentary on HBO Max?
I tried to and I got really gross. I just got.
It gets worse, dude.
All right, the best.
It gets way worse.
My favorite movie of the 1980s that's not action is 1989's Dead Poets Society with Robin Williams.
Oh, what a great movie.
It could have won Best Picture that year. It could have.
What a great movie.
What a freaking classic.
That's a
timeless classic.
How about like E.T. or like The Goonies? Oh, no, Goonies is action.
Yeah.
Action adventure.
So you can't put like a war movie in there either. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of, tell me if I'm lame for saying this. What's,
Die Hard.
St. Elmo's Fire.
Oh, my God.
I fucking love that movie. You don't know? No? No?
No. What about, like...
You don't like that movie at all?
St. Elmo's Fire?
Yeah.
No.
Really?
Yeah,
no. I don't think you've seen it.
Not in a long time.
All right.
Doesn't resonate. yeah, like there's some crazy, like what? Well, that was action.
Everything is that even like Adventures in Babysitting? Is that action too, Luke?
Yeah, action and adventure. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. All the Goonies stuff is action. You like any serious, like, adult drama?
What am I going to say? I watched fucking Beaches when I was a kid. You know, I want to watch blow 'em up shit.
I mean, what about Rain Man? This works, right?
Is that late 80s or early
90s? That's late 80s. And I think it won Best Picture. If it didn't win Best Picture, it won Best Actor.
I got to tell you, like, you know they don't make anymore because they just turn them into, like, movies miniseries or TV shows? They don't do, like, lawyer movies anymore.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I feel like there must have been some great ones in the 80s. Oh, Trading Places, dude. Trading Places is not an action movie.
Oh, right. We're forgetting comedy as a
I mean, we were leaving out all of Chevy Chase's best shit.
We're leaving out Fletch and Spies Like Us and that kind of shit.
I mean, so, dude, Trading Places to me is like, that's, I want to say it's peak Eddie Murphy, but it's definitely peak Dan Aykroyd. And it's just a phenomenal movie.
Sometimes I go on these runs, Luke, where I try to fill in. I never watch movies as they happen. You know what I mean? Like this most recent year when I was watching, like, 1917 in the theaters, and then Parasite, and then the Adam Sandler Uncut Gems. I never do that. I always watch movies way too late, mm-hmm. but I try to go back and fill in the blanks and pick out a year and watch all the Oscar Best Picture nominees. And some of these 80s like adult dramas are just, you know, like Terms of Endearment and some of these other. It's just like, fuck you, right?
Yeah, just get fucked.
Get out of here. I don't have time for that.
Just get fucked. Right? Okay.
What's that divorce movie with Woody Allen?
Oh.
Oh well, Kramer versus Kramer is the divorce.
That's the one, right? The one I said.
Yeah.
Which I've seen it's a million terrible.
Times, and you lived it, Luke.
I did live it. God. It was not pretty. Did you ever see that foreign movie in the '80s, The Gods Must Be Crazy?
Yes. I thought you were gonna say Emmanuel. I've seen that Emmanuel.
Oh, have you ever seen My Life as a Dog?
I think so.
That's a foreign language movie too. That was big in the '80s.
All right.
Ben, I think he's talking about Ben Askren. Stated that many people in the wrestling community say that Colby isn't a good guy, even without the MAGA personality. But many MMA fighters he is training with say the opposite. So what have you two guys heard about Colby from other people around him outside his personality? I think they mean, like, what do you know about the actual person?
I've just constantly heard that the actual person is, like, a decent dude and way different than this. Now, you can also tell yourself, did this start as a little bit of a persona and it just kind of became him?
Right.
But, you know, I've also heard from the beginning, Luke, that all of the public stunts and verbiage was all Dan Lambert writing it for him.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't had much interaction with Colby outside of professional capacity. I did have one where he was going to be at Fleet Week, and he wanted to see if I wanted to come cover it, which I didn't mind. And I think I was the only media outlet he asked to do that because I was obviously a veteran. And we tried to make it work. We couldn't make it work based on some of the scheduling. But, you know, he didn't call anyone else to go do that.
Like, is he a veteran?
No, but his grandfather was. He takes it seriously. He does tons of stuff with the troops, which I don't expect everyone to care about in the way that I do, but it does mean a lot to me. So, you know, I don't like what – there's just a lot of shit he has said. I don't want to hear any arguments about it. It's just indefensible, some of the stuff you said. Some of it's been borderline. Some of it's been, you know, not so big a deal. And, you know, I realize there's a debate around that. I don't know what to do about it because I do think there's part – like, people are complicated. And I do think there's part of him that's probably a pretty great person who cares about some things that I care about. I also think he's a person who has made a pretty decent living, you know, all things considered, saying fucked up shit. So
you can argue that so have you and I, Luke.
Yeah, probably you could. I don't think the same kind of fucked up shit, though. There's different levels to it.
Luke, can we talk quickly about your military background and the class structures? If somebody said, I'm a veteran, I served in the Coast Guard. Yeah. They're a veteran, right?
Yes.
Okay, you don't have like, no, you're not as tough.
Coast Guard bubbas are tough, I don't know.
All right, good, okay. But like
Coast Guard sounds lame, dude, but their jobs are fucking hard.
How much is there actual rivalries within the military? Because, for example, my uncle was in the Navy, and all he would tell me was fight stories and bars he had with, like, Marines and people in the Army.
Yeah, that's a lot of stupid shit that old people do that they want you to think it's tough because they have no other way to prove it. I would just say there is a rivalry. There obviously is rivalries, but they don't make as much sense as they used to. Like, what's the difference between the kind of combat that people have seen between branches in the last 20 years. I mean, obviously with the fact that the Navy's on water, but I mean between the Marines and the infantrymen of the Army, it's been almost identical. The skill sets, the Marines are, they're designed to be a altogether different service. It's the smallest of all the services. It's supposed to be amphibious in its warfighting capabilities. They're not really even the same thing. And a lot of these rivalries were born out of like World War II bullshit, you know?
Would you say though Marines have the most psychos?
Oh, they have the highest rates of alcohol abuse and, I don't bring this up like a good thing, it's a terrible thing, but I think they have more complaints about female integration and
is that the intensity assault of the training or is,
partly.
Or does the Marines attract a certain...
They attract fucking psychos. Okay. That's just
that's
the reality,
fair. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'd like to tell you it's not, but it's true. And even after the fact, it got kind of troublesome. This is a true story. I haven't really told this publicly, but like kind of fucked me up for a bit because I didn't realize how bad it was. There's a lot of scrutiny after the January 6th Capitol riot,
yes,
whatever you want to call it, because a lot of the folks who were arrested had a military either occupation or a background. And folks were like, how radicalized is the military? Much more than you might imagine.
Wow.
Much more. I remember there's a lot of dudes who I served with who, you know, there might be some small story that happens that, you know, some guy who has a vaguely Islamic name commits some crime. And they'll post pictures on Facebook of like the crusade, not pictures, but you know, images, like drawn ones of the crusades. Like old, you know, Christianity driving a knife into the heart of the world of Islam.
So you don't think I would have made it in the armed force?
No. Air Force sounds like
almost,
a good occupation for you.
I almost joined the National Guard.
That's valuable. They're all, this is the thing. Like when I was 20, I was like, you guys are all bitches, blah. And now that I'm 40, it's like, dude, they all serve a legitimately valuable.
So you have no issue with National Guardsmen?
I know a lot of Marines, that's a true story, they did 8 or 10 years, and they got sick of the shit because it was awful all the time,
yeah,
and then switched over and became National Guardsmen, finished their 20, and got a chance to retire. I know that for a fact. So yeah, like, it's a valuable thing. It's a valuable thing.
Okay. One day, I can't wait until you uncover some of the truth that I've uncovered in life, Luke, and then
yeah,
we can have real talks.
Is that right, Matlock? That's a fucking boomer reference. Jesus. Is that right, Inspector Clouseau?
Pink Panther bullshit right there?
Yeah. What Spanish language films have you seen, and which did you enjoy the most? All right, let me ask you this question, BC, because Lord knows you ain't seen shit in
the
Spanish.
The answer's no, bro. Okay, the answer's no.
You haven't even watched Coco in Spanish.
No.
You ever watched the Spanish pornography movie?
I have not seen. I used to watch Sábado Gigante just for
Sábado Gigante,
just
yeah,
for the
It's like a variety show. Yeah.
Well, there was well-endowed women on there.
Oh, on Latin TV? How
yeah,
how unusual.
So let me,
that seems so out of character,
yeah,
for
so
them.
I was very politically correct in describing that, right? I told the line.
Yeah, you more or less stuck the landing.
Okay.
Have you ever seen a foreign language movie beginning to end?
Now, what does that mean? Does that mean did I sit through subtitles? You made me watch Parasite through subtitles, and it was great. So does that count?
Yes, that's a foreign language movie, yes.
Okay.
Well, you think I want you to sit there for 2 hours listening to Vietnamese?
I don't know.
You don't understand?
Is that the only
one I've seen? That's literally your question? I got to sit here and listen to 2 hours of Russian? No, you can watch fucking subtitles.
I don't think I've seen a full subtitled movie besides Parasite. Like, complete subtitle start to... Oh, no, I watched Letters from... You made me watch Letters from Iwo Jima,
which is a lot of Japanese.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. All right, you're not hopeless.
Risen fans and I, we love that movie, all right?
You're not utterly hopeless.
But that was all in the last year, though, Luke, okay? And I'm 42.
So were it not for me, is what you're saying, you're already narrow,
you know,
horizons.
Look, my wife and I sometimes have this discussion. You, in small ways, have made me a better person
Back up. What does your wife say? You just said me and my wife.
Yeah, she believes that you have opened my eyes to being more of a kind person, to look out for others around me, even though these are some day-to-day beliefs I carry out very well in my personal life, you always, Luke, are looking out for me. You're always like, BC, do you have what you need? Can I get you something? Here, let me buy you dinner. Why did you buy me dinner last night, Luke? Why?
That's what friends
do, bro.
You
don't need to buy me dinner, Luke, okay? I probably make close to as much money as you, maybe even more.
You might
I don't
make
know,
more.
Luke. I don't know, but you don't have to buy me shit, but you're telling me you're my friend. I appreciate that, Luke.
Yeah, that's what the kind of guy I am.
The rest of you is suspect, but that part of you is decent. Okay.
What'd you think of Dominic Cruz's performance in his recent fight? Oh, hold on. I didn't answer the question. Foreign language, Spanish language? What was the last one I saw? Have you seen Money Heist? You have Netflix?
Yeah.
Have you seen Money Heist?
It's not. We're at the point now where people don't. There's no one who doesn't have Netflix, unless you're like over 60, right? And even then.
I bet Grace doesn't have.
Grace is like.
Grace, do you have 25. Netflix?
Grace, you have Netflix.
You do have Seriously. Netflix?
That's the worst reference you could have pulled. You know, if there was like a janitor around the corner, we could have made a 50-50.
It's only on Netflix, motherfucker. Have you not seen Money Heist? No, it's when I say Spanish, I mean from Spain.
Oh, I'm thinking of Money Train with J-Lo and Wesley Snipes.
No, I'm not talking about Money Train.
I think she shows her things in that.
She might. You've never seen Money Heist? It's actually called Casa de Papel.
No. I think you've talked about this. Is this a Mexican cartel movie?
I literally just told you it's from Spain. I just got done telling you that. Speaking of doesn't listen, you're like, yeah, they all sound the same. You're like, who was it? It was Adrian Broner. Mexican.
Yeah.
I'm in a can. And
they all can get it.
They all can get it.
Get it. Yeah, yeah.
All right, what'd you think of Dominic Cruz's performance in his recent fight?
I didn't watch the whole thing. Remember, I was using the restroom during that, and then I kind of skimmed it.
I'm glad you're here, BC.
Yeah, I didn't really watch. That's you told fine. Me that there was good footwork, that he wasn't as quick as he used to be, but...
Yeah, he can still beat guys to stay relevant.
But let's be honest. He can't win a fight coming from behind. He needs to be in control of the pace and keep a guy off balance, right?
I wouldn't say that.
He doesn't have the power, Luke.
He still has decent durability, and I definitely think he still has enough smarts and enough speed.
You know, he's one of my favorite personalities in the history of this sport.
Pretty hard to hate.
He is just... There is a disciplined, intelligent, persevering warrior inside of him. And I know that's a generic thing you can say about every fighter, but, like, he's a special dude, I'm telling you.
I never told this before. It's a funny story. I remember the day that John Jones sent me to hell was the... So the fight weeks always work...
July of 2017.
Yeah, well, hold on. But the fight weeks always work like this anymore, but most people know this. And sometimes the order can change, but there's usually a media day... There's some kind of open workout day, then there's weigh-ins, and then there's the fight. That's usually, and then again, for boxing, they'll have the grand arrival, right? Where they are, that's like the Tuesday of the fight week.
Yeah.
They arrive at the casino, that's a moment
Fans
in boxing.
Go nuts.
They don't do that in MMA, but they do it in boxing for some of the bigger fights. Anyway, so that was like a Wednesday where John sent me to hell. The next day was the media day. Now, the media day ended up being quite successful for me and for everybody else. It was great. I had a Brian Ortega interview there that blew up. It was amazing. And I remember... So Dom was there. Dom may not remember this way, but I remember it. And I don't think he meant anything by it. It's not like a diss in any way. But he was... So Dom, when he calls fights, he would show up to media day and interview the fighters.
Yeah. And like, he's like... And he doesn't want you to talk to him about... Like,
no.
It's like, he's serious.
He's in line. He's got a backpack. He's got his notes.
And he has this computer. Demeanor that says, do not come up to me and talk to me. I'm working. He
like,
has that.
Like, you ever seen those dudes at a university student who don't want to be fucked with at the library? That's Dominic Cruz, okay? He's not rude or anything, but he's on a mission. And I remember, you know, most people coming up to me the next day were like, dude, what'd you do? You know, I had to answer 1,000 questions. He didn't say shit to me. He just gave me this look. Like, it wasn't a mean look, but almost like a, wow, man, I'm sorry. He had this look on his face, like, put the ISO on me. It was like, one of those numbers, you know, like,
This
sorry
is after
about that.
You talked to him?
No, I didn't say a word to him.
Oh.
We just, like, looked at each other, because he was in line to talk to whoever. I was in line to talk to whoever, and I made eye contact with him, and I know who he is, and he was just
Yeah.
That was bad, bro. That was bad. I was like, yeah, thanks.
Luke, I know you've made a joke before that your mentions were a fucking graveyard.
Yeah, they were a graveyard.
That, how long did they stay that way after John sent you to hell? Like, days, weeks?
Well, it faded quickly. The intensity faded very quickly. But the, you know, it's like you when you leave a room, like, the fart smell just lingers.
It's like you as you're walking past first class to get to code,
yes.
And you just...
Yeah. It's like, he's not actively shitting in my face, but no, in all seriousness, the answer to the question is the intensity faded pretty rapidly. Twitter moves on for the most part, but the amount of, like... You know, 6 months later, oh, Luke, I'm not going to answer your question because I don't like you.
That shit
lingered pretty considerably.
You got to give John, can you give him any credit? That was a good zing. I mean, he got you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what am I going to say? He didn't?
Bullseye.
I mean, like, what are you guys talking about? He didn't get me? Yeah, no, it was, dude, the biggest punches, the ones that land the best
yes.
are the ones you did not see coming. And I mean, I couldn't have served them up.
Yeah, you were Chuck Liddell and he was Rashad. Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And by the way, I was thinking about this. Do people know that when Rashad knocked out Chuck, and this was in Atlanta, and Atlanta was silent. I mean, the whole crowd there was ready to see Chuck execute Rashad Evans. That was the general expectation among casuals, certainly anyway. And then Rashad not only won, but he won in the most devastating, awful, kind of like, is Chuck going to be okay kind of fashion. What was the place where they did it? The Phillips Arena, whatever it was called, went completely silent.
Were you there?
No, but hold on. But a bunch of friends of mine were. And Rashad put his hand over his heart.
Yes.
And did the Red Fox, Sanford and Son, was
fake
it Martha?
Heart attack, yeah.
Yeah, Martha, I'm coming bit. Which is maybe the most underappreciated post-win stunt in UFC history.
Yes, I mean, it's not Tito Ortiz digging a grave after surprising Ryan Bader with that choke. By the way, how does Bader live? I know Bader's gone on to great things. He's going to be in the 205 tourney.
Tough dude.
How does he live through? Is that the worst loss by an elite fighter in modern history, Luke?
Which one?
The Bader loss to Tito Ortiz by submission when Ortiz had lost like 7 in a row. You know what I'm saying?
It's bad.
That's one of the worst losses to a big name fighter in modern.
Yeah, that's one of those losses like 99 times out of 100, it probably won't go this way.
Yes, yes.
But the one time that it will, it did.
Oh, that's bad. That's bad.
Hold on, no. Put that down. This is not your podcast, this is mine. Luke, I was speaking to my friend, a casual MMA fan that has a Kate Spade phone.
Oh, what is this bullshit, Luke?
I'm teasing. But he watches whenever popular fighters like Conor and Adesanya are on a card, he asks.
It's 2021. A grown man can have his Kate Spade phone case, especially
not if he wants to avoid.
Especially in manly colors. Can we zoom in here? Look at the color scheme on that.
I mean, could you be a bigger cuck?
Brandon,
I mean,
behind the camera. This is male, right? Like, this is very.
Hold on. This is.
Bro, this is important. That's a male pattern, right?
Wow, could you have more scratches on this?
That's a male.
Has Reggie Jackson been getting a hold of this thing?
Reggie does what he wants. Look, can we go to our other camera? Grace, this is a male pattern, correct? Look at the color scheme.
You're making her focus now.
Yeah, well, okay, I see the name, Grace, but what about what sex does the pattern scream to you?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're asking our female colleague that, you fucking oaf.
I'm using it as a noun. Luke.
Jesus Christ.
I didn't make it a verb.
All right, can I ask this question?
Yeah, go ahead.
I asked him if Jones versus Francis excited him, and he asked, who is John Jones? It made me wonder, is Jones' star power relatively small for what he can do in the octagon? Yes. And let's go there. Do you believe that it is?
Yes, because even though I call him a consistent draw, meaning he gets over a period of a decade between 400 and, you know, 850K in terms of pay-per-view buys, consistently over, you know, even as the pay-per-view industry post Mayweather-Pacquiao has taken a decided dip, he's still giving you the 400-500s every single time.
You got to understand something about pay-per-view.
But he's never been a consistent million plus. We do have to realize
that. Correct.
Right?
So you understand something. If you can draw, let me put this out here. If you can draw 500,000 views on pay-per-view, you are an A-lister for pay-per-view. There are a handful of fighters in MMA who can draw 500,000 or more.
We got fooled into thinking.
Hold on, let me finish for crying out loud. Hold on. In that group of everyone who can draw 500,000 or more, BC, John Jones is closer to the weaker end of that group.
Okay.
He has never drawn, I think, he might have a million pay-per-views somewhere.
No, he doesn't.
The Cormier rematch was, like, what, 850?
Yeah, but that came during a bad time for pay-per-view.
Okay, so the point being is, if you're consistently drawing between 5 and 800,000, please don't misunderstand me. You are killing it. But inside the group of people who are killing it, there's a lot of them who have routinely exceeded the million plus. He is not part of that group. So, understanding that, that's sort of where he is. Would Lesnar versus Ngannou draw the biggest numbers if you could match heavyweights from any time at any point together?
So the question is, would Lesnar versus Ngannou right now?
I think he's saying, imagine if you, what kind of popularity would it be if you had peak Lesnar with this current version of Ngannou?
That's insane.
It would be off the charts.
Yeah.
Lesnar was a massive star for the short run that he was here.
I mean, you have to understand the rub he had coming out of the WWE, the failed NFL run into, let's see if he can do this, but it wasn't a Kimbo Slice or CM Punk thing. He freaking, that Frank Mir loss in their first fight, he basically won it in terms of like the moral win.
Yeah.
And it was like, holy crap, this guy's a real freaking fighter.
Yeah.
And then he knocks out Randy Couture and wins the championship. So it's like,
yeah.
it's, it, you have to realize that had he been a Kimbo Slice or a CM Punk, it would have gone like this. Instead, it went, yeah. And then it fell off when he got hurt.
Right. Okay.
But I was going to say, Luke, that the build up, the 5.5 year build up to Mayweather Pacquiao in boxing, did tricks with the pay per view industry, Luke. Before that, 90s Tyson could get you between 1 million and 2 million, and that was like the gold standard. Because there was so much long-term demand to see Mayweather Pacquiao, that it became no matter who either one fought, that they could automatically do over 1 million-plus buys because you were like, I need to see these two against each other. Is Pacquiao going to call out Floyd if he beats this guy? You know, and vice versa. And I think that that wrongfully inflated the idea that if you're not pulling 1 million-plus, you are not anybody. And then the crash after Mayweather-Pacquiao, which I think then went up again for Mayweather-McGregor, and then you had another post-crash. And obviously, right. Rousey and McGregor were in that run as well. But I think it can't be understated that those two crashes sort of killed the business. Not killed it to a death, but made it to where we are now, to your point, where if you do 400 or 500 on your own as a single draw, that's big.
Right.
Where that may have looked like a disappointment 8 years ago. Right. Now you realize, no, that's freaking legit.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that's absolutely right. BC, when Yoel Romero held your hand during that Showtime interview,
yes.
Do you want to confess anything when that happened?
Strong grip. I mean, and he just basically like covered, like it was, my hand was hiding inside of his, you know, the seven, Luke, what does this mean?
I don't know.
Does this mean I'm going to have luck and prosperity in my life?
I don't think it means anything.
Zoom in on my seven right here. I fit into the inside of his seven, Luke, and he just, you know, Luke, he's so, thank you, Brandon, for that zoom in. Luke, he's so loving, isn't he?
Yoel? Yeah, he's quite like, super friendly.
Dude, we didn't have like an off-camera 5 minutes, how you doing, bro?
No.
He basically came up on the set.
We did see him in the lobby later, and we talked to him briefly.
Yes, but he just came up on the set, and we had like, what, 30 seconds before we went live? And he was just like, we had been best bros whole life.
Yeah, he was cool. Some guys sort of get it. They sort of get that these media experiences work if everyone's in a better mood. If everyone just tries to like have a little fun, do a little song and dance, and then be on your way, they all kind of work. And he seems to understand that.
I understand that too, Luke. I'm trying to bring life to this very, you know, we answer technical questions on Luke's live chat. We don't laugh. We don't get, you know, I'm trying to Yoel Romero your life right now, okay? To get you to understand something you
BC,
don't passion.
You understand that this live chat did better numbers than your podcast?
Okay, but
before this union,
but it's
I don't
not
need.
About,
I don't. You are under the impression that I. Success, you're under the impression that I need your help. I do not need your help.
You don't need my help commercially, Luke. But to make you and to make them enjoy the experience more,
yeah.
I'm bringing passion to your.
No,
life.
You're bringing distraction. I'd like to read the next question. How would a fighters union affect the UFC's product? Would it be better or worse for the consumers? Where do you come down on this question? I come down on the answer that the question is not for the fighters. The question is not for UFC. The question is for the consumers. I'll tell you this. I legitimately, I don't think people are paying enough attention to the Ali Act. I've been talking to some folks who are behind that effort. Here's where it stands, because we should get to this a little bit. Where it stands is that the guy who is the main sponsor of the bill, the author of it essentially, is Mark Wayne Mullen. He's a Republican out of Oklahoma. He needs someone from across the aisle to be the new co-sponsor because the previous one was voted out. But they had many, many, many Democratic signatories. So that should not be difficult. Once they do that, they foresee, and this is not an official like thing that they said, but they were just kind of like guessing how long it would take before they had some loss ready for Biden's desk. They think under 2 years. That seems to me, A, plausible, B, quick, and C, dude, that's a... The law is... Have you seen the draft work of the Alia?
No.
Dude, it's almost as if... You ever go to, like, Microsoft Word, and you do track changes, and then you find all the... You've never written a paper on Microsoft Word?
Not really. I'm not really as computer savvy as you might guess, Luke.
Okay. Imagine they went through a document, and every time they saw the word boxing, they just put a line through it, and above it put MMA. It reads as if that version, it has just been bare bones, taken over, let's just paste it on top of MMA. Now, granted, if it got advanced in legislation, the legislation would change in language through markup and other processes. But you wonder, dude, are we going to have architecture that changes it to that? Because I have to tell you, in terms of the consumer, the biggest change I could imagine would be through the Ali Act, not through unionization.
That's fair. There's potential there. I think the spirit of that question, though, is asking whether fans will enjoy how much how much fighters getting what they deserve, will that negatively affect the product?
I think a lot. Enjoy?
I think it will to have long-term change and success, you're going to have some short-term growing pains. And we always say this, like, okay, boxers are making more money now than ever. Maybe you can give Al Haymon the respect for that. But are we seeing consistently the as good of matchmaking as we did in the 70s and 80s when Bob Arum and Don King were sometimes accused of fleecing fighters and they didn't have the same control and it was sort of like, you're going to fight this next guy next and that you have to do it. That's your fight. Do it. We were getting better fights. We're getting better fights over this run in the UFC because they have so much freaking control and fighters haven't organized together and stood up for themselves. Yes, it naturally we're going to get a little bit of a watering down the more control fighters get. I think the question you have to ask yourself is that better long-term for the overall health of the sport, overall?
It would
to take care of the guys who are going out there and putting on these wars for entertainment. You know, obviously you want them to get, there is a way to have both, but I think you will initially see if these guys have more say over matchmaking and...
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't think that they will. Here's why I say the union, and again, we would need to talk to a lawyer about this, but this is to the best of my understanding, in order to be in a union, not a trade association, but a union which has different legal classification and does different things, the union requires you to be an employee, not of the union, but of the organization. Right. So technically it would turn them from independent contractors to employees. Now, in most cases, if you're an employee of the New York Giants, I'm an employee of the Philadelphia Eagles, the league just tells you where the fuck you're playing and on what day.
True.
Now, I would imagine that the fighters would still want to have some kind of language written into any kind of collective bargaining agreement about their right to refuse matchups, either because, I'm injured, I can't take it, or blah, blah, blah. But
we'd remove the desperation of, I'm injured, but I have to take this fight because I have to pay my bills.
Right, but I also think that they just would not, I don't know what the mechanism is in play there that hands control back to them. That happens in the Ali Act, not so much that, as I understand it, with unionization.
Well, I think, and also the big question in terms of matchmaking and how this might affect is if the UFC, for example, as the leading organization, if they are forced to pay more of their bottom line and more of their money back to the fighters, will they have the same ability due to you're assuming they would have less money in the pot to constantly make these giant big time matchups that we love, right? If they're paying guys more, you won't be able to as consistently get these. Oh my God, they're loading up that pay-per-view card too. We may see a slowing down of that, correct?
Right, that is certainly possible.
Because big matchups, when guys are getting paid what they deserve, cost money. So you may see, okay, we're gonna put this pay-per-view main event on, but the rest of the card's gonna be absolute shite.
Yeah.
Which sometimes you do see, sometimes.
A little bit.
Right?
But I also don't think the pay rate, here's the problem with the union. The union without a competitive market structure to have teams bidding on your services, it would raise the UFC fighters' pay, but not to the level that you see in, you know, a league where you have the Mariners who want someone from the Nationals, who want someone from the Pirates, and blah, blah, blah. You don't necessarily have that market dynamic, and so you're actually wondering what raises the pay. It would be the fact that you could collectively bargain, but if you want fighters to get full pay, you need the Ali Act. You're not really going to get that with unions. So this is where it comes. This is why I think this debate is ferociously interesting. Because the consumers have one expectation, the promoter has one expectation, and then the fighters have a different expectation, and everyone has to get what they need out of this. The problem we have now is there's clearly an imbalance, and we're just trying to figure out how you solve it. But, dude, there is one kind of solution, whichever way you want to look at this, you could implement that's going to turn it in the another direction where now, let's say, the fighters have too much control, and you no longer have the same product.
But you can argue that in some pockets of boxing, that's where we have right now.
That's exactly right.
And I do want them to have health benefits, though, fighters, please.
I mean, that's a no-brainer.
I mean,
that's a
that?
No-brainer.
They don't need to move in with the Bronstedters just to get free health care, right?
That's right.
Although, if they did, though, do you know his vinyl collection is out of control, Luke?
Who?
Aaron Bronstedter. I love that guy. Great respecter of jazz as the real form of music, the real art in music.
Yep.
Is jazz. You realize that, right?
All right, last question. We both can do this because you pressed this on me, so now we're
my last question, Luke. I'm just warming up. I'm having a good time. What time is it?
It's 4:13. We have time for one more.
Ruin your live chat today, or did I add?
Ruin's a strong word. Ruin's a strong word.
Because I'm getting people texting me saying Luke hates you.
I don't hate you. No, I don't hate you.
Right.
You are annoying sometimes, but I certainly do not hate you. Okay, so BC, I'm going to pitch it to you first. What are your religious beliefs? I'm not talking about the 16-year-old's reply of, you believe in, at least talking to me, you believe in a sky, Daddy. I guess a better question would be, what are your thoughts on religion? Why don't you go first, BC, your religious beliefs. Generally speaking, how would you state the nature of your spiritual life.
I'm a, I guess, you know, I mean, this title doesn't really tell the story, but I guess you could call me a born-again Christian.
Okay.
Grew up Catholic and distant and didn't really care.
You grew up Catholic?
Yeah, but did go through the motions, got confirmed, got all that stuff.
You've been baptized and all that
stuff?
Baptized,
confirmed, all that. And then...
I did not know you grew up Catholic.
You know, at a really broken point in my adult life, I had a very dramatic spiritual reawakening. I mean, like, just dramatic, where you were just like, yep, it's real. Apparently it's real. Apparently this is real. And I became a Christian. Now, am I a...
You were a Christian being a Catholic.
You know, Catholic is certainly Christianity, but I became more of a, I guess I became more of a...
Protestant, sounds like.
I became more of a Bible-centered Christian, non-denominational.
Okay.
I do go to a Baptist church, but it's more non-denominational, which is really just focusing on the Bible in a lot of ways. But, you know, at the same time, Luke, there's certainly some things in the overall thing. I'm not like, what I've learned, because I think, you know, when I became a Christian in the early 2000s, you know, I went through a very... serious run in my life where I was like, oh man, I got to clean up everything in my life, and I've got to be this, almost this, you know, hypocrite and this whatever, and I got to be against everybody and tell everybody what they're doing wrong. And I've certainly learned Luke, that you know what I know? Nothing. Yeah. I don't know a lot, right? What I do know, I cling to and I believe in, and I try to share and help others, but I don't know all the answers. I don't know what's going to make your life better. I can give you advice, but I don't know. But I'm here for you just the same.
I believe that. I believe
so
that.
So there is a man named Jesus Christ that I love. Oh, God, I love that guy. And I will stand up for him, Luke. If you want to fight me over that name, if you drop any more of these JC bombs that you like to throw the F word in the middle of, I'm not down for that. We could come up with those.
I also have a TF word I like to drop.
But but yes, that guy saved me from a lot of trouble in my life and my kids as well. So you're damn right it's real.
I mean, listen, I like to make a lot of jokes about it, mostly to tilt BC. But the truth is, I'm sort of like you. I don't claim to know. I don't know what happens when we die. I do not know. I certainly believe that, you know, there's a significant room for interpretation about what happens when we die. I understand that most people seek out any version of the Abrahamic religion for internal guidance, for social guidance, for social bonding, for any reason why you might do those kinds of things in a genuine, and to use the term, good faith.
Yep.
Kind of way. So in all seriousness, like, I really don't, I mean, I just don't have any issue with it. For me personally.
What do you call yourself?
I guess atheist, agnostic, or which they're not exactly the same thing, but.
With full respect to you, because I love you, Luke, do you believe there's any form of other power out there? Like, there's any right or wrong and reason to this world?
Do I believe in absolute right and wrong?
Do you believe in a form of a God that's controlling or overseeing or refereeing or anything?
I don't tend to think that the evidence bears out that there is, but I certainly reserve the right to say that the amount of evidence that we have is probably fairly limited, and see what happens.
Do you believe in a concept of like a heaven and hell afterlife?
I do not. I believe those are barbaric and ancient.
Well, that's fair.
My only issue is, then this is sort of where the rubber meets the road a little bit. I was raised Christian as well. I just moved away from it because I no longer found it a convincing way to guide my personal existence, or that it explained the real world in any kind of way that mattered to me. I also don't think that any of the Abrahamic religions really offer a coherent and modern moral guideline.
I've learned in my time, Luke, that the worst thing you can actually be is religious. Like, I hate that term. People are like, oh, I forgot you're religious. It's like, because that
it depends what you mean.
It speaks so much into like principles and like, you know, stern, yeah, you know, whatever.
Well, that you just can't interact with this person without it being an ever-present fact.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. Can't we just love each other, Luke, you and I?
Yeah, the one thing I will
can't
say.
Can't two grown men in 2021 just love each other?
I think so. The one thing I would say is, the one thing I did not like about Christianity at all, the part of my life that I did spend in the Deep South, I found the evangelical Christians, I found them oppressive and awful.
Well, I found that man ruins a lot of God's
well,
good
that
intentions.
Version of them in particular. Yeah, let me tell you something. When I left the South and I knew that I was leaving those social forces behind, for the most part, I did the jig, because I don't think that they make anyone's life any better ever. So there you go. That's it. Okay. Do you want to open up some gifts?
Yeah. So
How do you say gift in Spanish? Regalo.
I don't know.
Regálame, is what Colombians say.
I look like I'm cultured.
Colombians say, gift me.
Look, we've got great viewers, all of our people. We really love them. And a couple of them have said, oh, you guys are going to be back in the bomb shelter. Let me send you some stuff. So, Luke, do you know about that? One of our growing great listeners, a real nice fellow by the name of Lee Selker, former Duke wrestler. You know that guy?
He wrestled at Duke?
Yeah, he did. His wife is Peruvian, Luke.
Okay.
He has sent these, and he needs you to try
Peruvians
them.
Have the best cuisine in South
Check
America.
Check out these Peruvian sauces that Lee has sent us, Luke.
Crema de rocoto. I've never had that. I have had this one. Huancaina, is I think how you say it. I'm not sure. Ají is like their sauce.
Okay.
So queso is cheese. Ají is like
these sauces.
Ají is like salsa, kind of, not exactly.
Well, considering I am the sauce, Luke, and I understand its importance.
Huancaina?
I do like Huancaina? The idea of these packets with the spout. Luke, we should buy a nondescript piece
Huancaina,
of meat.
Huancaina, I think is how you say it. Huancaina.
Do you want to buy a nondescript piece of meat with me and pour these on there, Luke? Do you think this is hot? This is red hot chili sauce.
Do you know el rico sabor de casa? You know what that means?
Okay, in your house is de casa, right?
Yeah.
So is sabor like...
It's like basically saying like the best flavor.
Oh, okay.
The richest flavor.
Yeah, yeah.
Taste.
And also, Luke, he says we need to make popcorn and put this nutritional yeast seasoning on top of it.
I've heard that. I've never used that.
It will change our damn life, he says.
All right.
And you got to make the popcorn yourself.
I've had this, so you have to have it, but I want to try this. The crema de rocoto.
Okay. Thank you, Lee. We appreciate that. We will check that out, maybe on Room Service Diaries.
And I've had this one, too. A buddy of mine made it who's Peruvian. This is extremely good. This is a little bit plain, in my judgment. But it's quite good.
Now, would your wife, who loves being Colombian, would she be down with Peruvian cuisine?
She loves Peruvian food. Okay. Peruvian food is, I don't know if you know anything about
it. I know you, because you're always like, they don't like this country, they don't like this country.
Well, here's the thing. When they come to the United States, everyone's like, yay, we're all Latinos, yeah. We're all one. And then you go to their countries, and they all talk shit about each other. I've seen it a million times. So, yes, there is a little bit of rivalry. But, most people from, Spanish-speaking countries that I've ever talked to, they all kind of like Peruvian food is, it's lo mejor.
Do you think Lee is secretly setting me up to shit my pants by sending these?
No, he's giving you, this is store-bought shit, but compared to the fucking raccoon garbage shit you eat, this is amazing.
I resemble that remark. Okay.
You resemble it, do you? Yeah,
thank you. All right, there thank you, Lee, for that one. Let's go to the next goodie bag we got here, Luke. Next box. All right, this is in the making, Luke. There's a man named Travis Mullen, big-time fan of what we do here at MK. Luke, do you know he owns a brewery?
I do now.
He's been trying to send us some good shit for a while, Luke. So he says, you want to read this, Luke, real quick?
Okay. It's not much, actually. He just says, thanks for all the killer content. Hope these beers find you well. Here's a list of ABVs for the cans. Cheers. And then he gives the names and their percent alcohol.
So he represents Imprint Brewing Company, Luke, which
we're giving them free advertising.
We are giving because they're giving us free shit, Luke. It's a great tandem right there, okay?
Are you saying we want them to send us free shit?
I didn't say that because we're gonna get gross things, Luke, like a bag full of stick picks or something. But but our man has outfitted us with many a nice beer in there. So I'm very excited to
Busted Bracket Imprint beer. It's a IPA. Wow, more IPAs. We don't have enough of those.
We got a lot in here. Luke, he has curated our beer for this
all
week.
Marshmallow everything. That sounds awesome. And then this one is dough. No, DDH. This is grumble? Crumble? I'm not sure what it is. Oh, here we go. Citra crumble. Double dry hopped double IPA.
Oh, that sounds fantastic, Luke.
It sounds like a thing you
would like. So we are fired up out of Hatfield, Pennsylvania, the Imprint Brewing Company, Luke. I cannot wait to take these down.
Why don't you try one?
Maybe during, right now, maybe?
Yeah, have one. All right. They're a little warm, but that's okay.
No, they're actually pretty cold.
It's an IPA.
He sent it with some,
Let me see. Ooh.
Wow.
Puffsicle Colada Pomegranate.
You might have to
hold on.
That open
so
right
pick
here.
A beer. I'll tell you what the ABV is. Pick
How about that one right there?
All right. So this one is the Puffsicle Colada. 6%.
All right. What about this Mango Rex?
5.6.
All right. I'll try that one, Luke. I'll try that
Salud.
One.
Salud. And I know we cheers before we opened it, but they can.
This is all to all
they
Colombians.
Can all, they
this,
can,
look, this is to all Colombians.
Well, if it's Colombians, we gotta do a Colombian style. Hang on.
People, okay?
Hang on.
you know, arriba, abajo, el centro.
Dude, this is delicious.
That is shockingly.
That's like a milkshake in a can. That is fantastic.
That is so motherfucking good.
Bro, I'm not like.
That okay. is like shockingly
good. So I know,
good.
Here's what I, here's, okay, here's the deal. People are watching going, oh, you're saying nice
you
things
want a glass?
About.
Get a glass. Get a glass.
You, people are probably thinking, oh, you guys are just saying nice things about Imprint Brewing.
Get a few.
Because they hooked you up. Luke, you have actually spoken bad about alcohol that we have sponsors here.
We had sponsors, and I was like, yo, fuck this alcohol.
And they were like, oh, my God,
Do you want to trade?
We need to delete that. You know?
Can I try?
Yeah. You got COVID tested already.
No. I do have AIDS.
Oh, my God, that's really good. It's like a smoothie and a beer can.
Mine's better than yours, and yours is good.
Wow.
Holy, right. Dude, I am like shocked at how good this is.
This, shout out to the folks at Imprint Brewing, bro.
That was a good call.
I don't know if they got a double XL for you, Luke. Cool. Hopefully, but yeah. Thanks. All right.
Grace, you want one? I have put my lips on it, but no, Grace I don't actually have it.
Dude, Grace is actually like, can I get off the show right now?
Can you give that to her?
She doesn't want it, Luke.
You don't want it?
Oh, she does. Okay.
Here, give her ladies
Grace,
first.
Come get it. The camera's fine, all right?
She does not. No. Don't make her be on camera. Please don't make her be on camera. No, I don't. Some people don't want to
do it. Are you in our HR trial later?
Yeah, this exactly. Right, this is where right. HR, yeah,
all right,
yeah.
All right. Sorry, Grace. Here you go.
Here, dude. Yep.
All right, Luke, we got more free shit. You want to do one more?
Yeah.
All right, this is from our folks at Rustic Tribe Design in Ramsey, New Jersey.
I cannot believe how good this is, right? Did you try it? What do you think? That's pretty good, right?
And by the way, our buddy Travis curated these beers with you in mind, knowing that you're not an IPA.
Look at this piece of business.
We gotta
get these things out of the way.
Yeah, get that shit out.
So the way it works is, you have a bottle opener here. You have mixer and like Beam Coke glass bottle here. They're a little what do you want to call them? Caddies?
Yeah.
For drinking?
We should almost consider putting these as part of the set.
I think this has to be part of the set.
Because
there's one thing that unites us. It's MMA and drugs.
Rustic Tribe Design, our friends over there in New Jersey, made this for us, Luke. This is fan-friggin-tastic. So thank you, everyone, for
dude, these
sharing
are like,
a bit
these
of
are like
your,
real wood. These are heavy.
No, these are well-made. That is fantastic.
That's
I know this
cool.
became an infomercial of free shit, Luke, but we support people who support us. What does Steven Jackson like to say of all the smoke? I got love for people who have love. Is that what he says, Luke?
I don't know. I got a hole through the center of mine. You don't. What's this for?
Probably something sexual.
I don't think that's what it's for. But I'm betting you'll try.
All right. I'm sure.
I don't want to see dick splinters.
I'm sure
McGee
it has
tomorrow.
Something to do with alcohol, Luke. It's probably well intentioned. All
right. All right. Anything else now that you've sullied my live chat with your
dude? This is really good.
Yeah, I know. I'm shocked. I'm like legitimately shocked.
What kind of beer?
You want to try the other ones before we get off, or we should just get off?
No.
Let's just end the show.
Let's just end.
All right. So as a reminder, big thanks to Brian for taking part in today's live chat. Like the video, send it around to folks who may not have seen it before. It's a little something like this, although it's usually just me. You can see, however, all of us, including Morning Combat, on social media right there. Give us a follow. As you can see, the names are a little bit different between Instagram and Twitter for both BC and I.
I can't wait to dip my meat in that Peruvian sauce. We want to shout out Imprint Brewing for the fantastic shit over there in Hatfield, Pennsylvania.
I could not believe how good that is.
And I got a nice little holder for it right here.
And I'll say this. We're back tomorrow morning. We have another MK, and we have a post-fight show tomorrow for the debut of Bellator on Showtime. So come right back here after the fight between Pitbull and Emmanuel Sanchez. All right? For Brian Campbell, I'm Luke Thomas. Thank you so much for watching. Until next time, stay frosty.